Radio Krishna presents Stories from the Mahabharata, or the History of Greater India. Seven times longer than the Iliad and the Odyssey combined, the Mahabharata is the greatest epic known to man. It was originally revealed to Vyasadeva, the celebrated compiler of the Vedas. Having conceived it, Vyasadeva thought of the means for giving this sacred story to the world. He called to mind the demigod Ganesh, who appeared before him. Vyasadeva offered Ganesh due respects and sought his aid.
Lord Ganesh, I would like to dictate the story of the Mahabharata, and I ask that you write it down.
Very well, I'd be glad to comply with you on one condition, however. That is that my pen must not cease while I'm writing, and that means that you must dictate without pause or hesitation.
Vyasa agreed, guarding himself, however, with the counter stipulation.
Be it so, but first you must grasp the meaning of what I dictate before you write it down.
Ganesh smiled and agreed to the condition. Then the sage began to sing the Mahabharata, and while Ganesh would pause here and there to get at the meaning, Vyasa availed himself of these intervals to compose many fresh stanzas in his mind. Thus the Mahabharata came to be written by Ganesh to the dictation of Vyasadeva. And now, stories from the history of Greater India, the divine Mahabharata. Anyone who bathes himself in the nectar of these tales will emerge with greater courage, stronger will, and a purer heart.
Today's story in the Mahabharata is entitled The Life of Karna.
Mother, will you tell me something?
Said Karna to his mother Radha. She was the wife of the charioteer Atirath. Karna was their son, and it was his birthday. He was today 16 years old, and he asked her,
Mother, it's my birthday today. Father has bought me a new chariot and new horses. He says that I am now old enough to drive a chariot. But Mother, I don't want to drive a chariot. My hands are itching to hold a bow and arrow, and I can't think of anything else. Waking or sleeping, my thoughts are forever fixed on this one desire. I want to fight. I want to become an archer. Why, Mother? Why should this unnatural desire find such a prominent place in my heart?
And tears sprang to the eyes of his mother Radha. She sat silent. Her tears flowed on. Karna was shocked to see them, and he put his arms around her and asked,
Mother, have I wounded you? I love you more than my life. If anything I said has hurt you, then please accept my apologies. I would rather kill myself than cause you pain. Tell me, Mother, why are you crying?
Without answering his question, she said,
Yesterday you were talking in your sleep. You said, Do not go before you answer my question. Who are you? Why do you haunt me like this? My son, what was your dream?
Karna was silent for a few moments, and then he replied,
Mother, very often my sleep is disturbed by a dream, as you have discerned, and it's always the same dream. I see a woman. She's dressed in costly robes. They are, I think, the robes of a princess, but her face is always hidden by a veil. I'm lying down, and she slowly bends over me. Tears from her eyes burn my cheeks. They wake me up. I ask her, Who are you? But, Mother, this woman of my dreams vanishes then like a startled ghost. Mother, could you tell me why this happens to me? Why is it that I do not want to be just a charioteer like my father? There must be some reason for it.
Radha drew him nearer to her, and she placed him on her lap. Holding him close, as if she were afraid to lose him, she said,
My son, the time has come when I should tell you a story. It happened 16 years ago. It was a very beautiful morning. Early in the morning, your father had gone to the banks of the Ganges River to offer morning prayers to the sun. His eyes were dazzled by something shining, an object floating on the river, and he was intrigued. It looked as though some shining jewel were floating. After a time, the object became nearer, and your father's curiosity was aroused. He swam across to the heart of the river to find out what the gleaming object was. He first saw a wooden box. It was wrought beautifully. He went nearer the box and looked inside. And there he saw a sight which struck him dumb. He found that the box contained a beautiful child. It was the most beautiful child he had ever seen. It was sleeping peacefully. The Ganges River put him to sleep, perhaps, with a lullaby which his mother could not sing to him. So thought your father. With the box in his hand, he swam ashore. He rushed home. Radha, Radha, look! I have brought you something. I have a gift for you, shouted your father. I ran out to see what made him so excited. I could not believe my eyes when I saw the child in his arms. Why, I said, the child is as beautiful as the morning sun. It is glowing. Look at the earrings and the armor. It is a child belonging to some god.
Karna sat up abruptly. He dared not breathe. So terrible, so full of wonder was this story. And Radha held him closer as if to say, In a few moments you will leave me. Till then, let me hold you tight. And the story went on.
Surely, I said, surely this child is no earthly child. It must belong to some god. No earthly child can have this beauty. Your father smiled at me and said, Perhaps it is a child born of the heavens which God has sent down to you because you are childless. I feel that he has been created for your sake. I am sure that he is meant for you, just you. And so I am going to call him Radhi, since he will belong to you and be your dearly beloved son. He will also be called Karna. We were thrilled at the thought of a child in the house. I was very happy. I looked at the box. It was no ordinary box. You had been placed in it wrapped in a piece of silk, costly silk, the kind of silk that only a princess would use. But it was no use speculating. We could guess that you were the son of some high-born maiden, perhaps a princess, who had thought fit to abandon you for reasons known only to herself. But we now had a son to brighten our home. That was all that mattered to us. Since you were born with earrings and armor, we also named you Vasushena. But your father always called you Radhi, and later you became known as Karna. Most probably, you belong to a palace. You have been living all these years as the son of a poor charioteer. All the wealth we could give you was the wealth of our love. It is because of your birth that you do not want to be a charioteer. You want to learn archery because you are Kshatriya. I am almost sure that you are a Kshatriya warrior.
And with sobs racking her frame, Radha said,
Go, my son. You are not my son. Go out into the world and search for your real mother. When you find her, the void in your life will be filled up. As for me, I am grateful to God for giving me a son all these years. The memory of these few years will keep me alive in years to come.
Karna bathed her form with his tears, and he told her,
Mother, what are you saying? Do you want to abandon me as my other mother did? I don't know who she is, and I don't want to know. All I know is that I have a mother, the sweetest and dearest of all mothers. You gave me life. You are my mother. Who knows, I might be a Kshatriya prince. Most probably I am, but I don't care. I don't want to be anything other than just what I am, your son. My name is Radheya, and Radheya, the son of Radha, I will be to the end of my life. That will be the name by which the world will call me. Why should I be ashamed of my parents? I am proud to be the son of a Suta. I am Radheya, the Suta Putra. Mother, in this world there's nothing like learning. Learning cares not for caste or creed. I will go in quest of learning. A learned man will find recognition wherever he goes. The thirst for knowledge, for proficiency in archery, is burning my body. I will go and acquire knowledge. But remember, Mother, I'm not leaving you. I'm coming back to you. You are my mother, and nothing, nothing can take you away from me or me from you.
Radheya embraced his mother. She held him close, and their tears flowed and intermingled incessantly. Karna's one aim was knowledge. He wanted to learn archery. He heard that Hastinapur was famous throughout the world for archers who had been receiving instruction from the great Drona, and Karna went to the city. He was able to find Drona alone, and he saluted him and said,
"My lord, I want you to accept me as your pupil. I want to learn archery from you."
Drona wanted to know who he was, and Radheya said,
"I am the son of Atiratha. My name is Radheya, the Suta Putra."
Drona was not in a position to teach archery to the son of a Suta, and he told him,
"You are a Suta Putra, son of a low-born man. Society forbids me to teach archery to low-born people."
And Karna went back home. He wended his way homewards, haunted by the name Sutaputra, a stigma which clung to his name till the very end of his pain-filled life. He spent days and nights thinking out a way to acquire mastery in archery. He found that his being a Sutaputra was a great barrier everywhere. Karna was becoming desperate. At last he decided to go to Bhagavan Bhargava and learn archery from him. This man was a hater of the Kshatriya warriors. Karna knew about the terrible anger of this sage, but he was in a dilemma. He argued to himself that since a Suta is one who is born to a Kshatriya and a Brahmin, he would say that he was a Brahmin. If he said that he was a Brahmin, he would certainly be accepted by the great man as his pupil. He had made up his mind. Karna reached the ashram of the great Bhargava. With hope burning in his heart like a torch, he entered the ashram. With his matted locks and burning eyes, Bhargava was a terrible personality to behold, and Karna was overawed by him. He fell at the feet of the great man with reverence and said,
"I've come to you with hope and longing. Please do not send me back empty-handed."
The sage lifted him up. Karna's eyes were full of tears. His frame was trembling with fear and a strange exhilaration. Bhargava was pleased with the young man and his humility, and Karna told him that he was a Brahmin and that he wanted to learn archery. Bhargava smiled at him gently and said,
"I will certainly teach you all that I know. I will do it willingly."
Karna's education began. He spent many happy months and years in the ashram of Bhargava. He was able to forget the incessant pain which gnawed at his heart. He forgot the insult that had been heaped upon him because of his situation in life. He forgot the unknown woman of his dreams and the mystery attached to his birth. The dreams were less frequent now. Karna was bent on only one thing, knowledge. Knowledge meant power. It meant fame. It meant recognition. It was the only thing worthwhile in the world of men. Fate thought that the time of peace and contentment that Karna was enjoying should be brought to an end. His education was now complete. Bhagava had taught him all the divine weapons, including the Brahmastra and the powerful Bhargavastra. It was nearing the time of departure of Karna. Bhagava was giving him his final piece of advice. He said,
"I have been very happy all these days. It was a pleasure to teach you archery. I've given you all the wealth of knowledge that I had. I'm proud to have had you as my disciple. You are very honest, fond of those who are elder to you, always eager to walk in the path of righteousness. You must use the knowledge you have acquired in upholding righteousness. You must never use it in an unrighteous cause."
The sun had now reached the high heavens. The heat was becoming unbearable. The great Bhargava wanted to rest under the shade of a tree. He told Karna to go to the ashram and bring him a roll of deerskin for a pillow. He was feeling tired and would like to rest under the shade of the tree. Karna told him,
"My lord, I am here. I will sit down and you can use my lap as your pillow. Can I not do this small service to the greatest of men?"
Bhargava was pleased with his devotion. So under the tree they rested, Karna with his guru's precious head on his lap. His mind was wandering through the maze of words which his guru had spoken now. His guru had called him an honest man. Was he honest? Perhaps not. Karna had told him that he was a Brahmin when he was not. But then, that was the only way he could get learning from him which he yearned for. The wise say that the end justifies the means. His aim was to acquire knowledge. For that he had spoken an untruth. A lie was a sin if it was used to achieve something sinful. But he had not tried to commit any sin. His lie certainly would be forgiven. Thoughts like these chased each other in his troubled mind. Some time passed. Suddenly, Karna felt something stinging him in the thigh. The pain was unbearable. Without disturbing his guru, he bent down to see what was hurting him, and he saw that it was an insect. It was a dreadful thing to look at. Something that looked like a little pig. It was a very small image of a pig, for it had a sharp snout, and the snout seemed to be made of steel. It felt so hard. This snout was embellished with several rows of teeth, and it felt as though a steel saw were filing into his flesh. Karna could not remove it. It was steadily plowing into his flesh, and the pain was intolerable. But what could he do? His guru was sleeping, resting his head on his lap, and it was not right to disturb his sleep. Racked by the terrible pain, patient Karna sat unmoved. The insect, after digging through his flesh, had now quite pierced his thigh, and blood streamed forth. The touch of the warm blood on his face roused Bhargava from his sleep, and he stared at Karna and said,
"What? What is this? There's blood on my face. Where did it come from?"
Karna told him,
"From my thigh, my lord. While you were sleeping, an insect came and stung me in my thigh. It's been causing me pain for some time now, but I didn't want to disturb you, so I tolerated it. Then blood started flowing from the wound."
Bhargava looked at the insect, drunk with the blood of Karna. his amazement was great. He told him,
"You say that this insect stung you. You say that it was painful. How is it you did not get up at once and try to stop this pain?"
Karna replied,
"My lord, you were sleeping on my lap. You were tired and you were resting. I was more concerned about your sleep than about my pain. I didn't want to disturb your sleep. Hence, I didn't pay any attention to it."
Bhargava could not believe his ears. He was puzzled and he said,
"I cannot understand it. How can you, a Brahmin, bear so much pain? It is well known that Brahmins cannot bear pain or even the sight of blood. Tell me the truth. You are not a Brahmin. You can never be a Brahmin. Only a Kshatriya can behave as you have done. Have I, after all these years, taught my beautiful weapons to a sinful Kshatriya? I have hated Kshatriyas. I will never forgive you for this, your deception. You are a Kshatriya. Admit it."
Karna fell at his feet, tears streaming from his eyes. It broke his heart to think that all that he had learned would become futile. He realized that it was to be so. He held on firmly to the feet of his guru and cried,
"Forgive me, my lord. You've been more than a father to me, and a father should forgive the faults of his child. I am not a Brahmin. But then, I am not a Kshatriya either. I am Radheya, the son of the Suta. My father is Adirata. A Suta is born of a Kshatriya and a Brahmin. Hence, I told you that I was a Brahmin. The only thing I wanted was learning. They say that learning cares not for caste or creed. In your nobleness, my lord, can't you overlook this fault of mine? So I did tell a lie to you, but it was only to become your pupil. I have been devoted to you. To me, you are dearer than anything else in this world. Can't you please show mercy and forgive me? I beg of you, please forgive me."
Bhargava was furious. He would not relent. Not all the tears and prayers of poor unfortunate Karna would move him. He was firm. He forgot the devotion of Karna. He forgot his humility. He forgot the affection his pupil had for him. He was blind to the fact that it was this affection for him that made Karna suffer the insect to sting him. He was himself so fond of Karna, he forgot even that. Only one thing stood out. Karna had spoken a lie. All the other facts were thrown right back into the background. Bhargava used the one weapon that the rishis were capable of using. He cursed Karna, saying,
"You have learnt archery under false pretenses. When you are desperately in need of a weapon and your life is in danger, your memory will fail you. You will not be able to remember the invocation for calling the weapon to your side."
With these words of his guru, Karna fell at his feet, senseless. He roused himself a few moments later. With sobs racking his frame, he implored,
Why have you cursed me like this, my lord? I spoke a lie only because I wanted knowledge. You must not be so harsh."
It was of no use. The Brahmin's words had been spoken. They were irrevocable. There was no way of recalling his curse. Bhargava then addressed Karna in a slightly mollified tone.
"I have spoken. Nothing can change it. But there is one fact about which I can assure you. You wanted fame? You will get it. You will be known in after times as the greatest archer that ever graced the earth.
And the great Bhargava left him. Karna slowly raised his head. He saw that his guru had gone. Wiping his eyes with his forearm, he walked away, sunk in the depths of despair. He walked aimlessly. He did not know where he was going. He reached the shores of the sea, and he sat there. He knew not how long. The beating of the waves against the shore made him think of his own ineffectual attempts to fight against the world which had set its face away from him because he was a Sutta-putra. The mournful dirge of the sea was like a balm to his wounded heart. He got up from there and walked away, and when he was coming back, he saw an animal flash past. More by instinct than anything else, he shot an arrow at the animal and it fell down dead. He went near and found to his horror that it was not a deer as he had imagined it to be, but a cow, and it belonged to a Brahmin. Karna went to him and told him that he had shot his cow out of ignorance. He tried to pacify him by a gift of many more cows and riches, but the Brahmin was very angry. He gave vent to his anger by cursing Karna, saying,
"When you are fighting with your enemy, your heart's deadliest enemy, the wheel of your chariot will sink into the ground. And just as you have killed my poor innocent cow when she was unaware of the danger that threatened her, you will also be killed by your opponent when you are least prepared for it."
In a flash, Karna knew that he was the chosen target of fate. His birth was shrouded in mystery because of the heartlessness of the woman who had given him birth. His boyhood and later manhood was blighted by the stigma, Sutta-putra, that clung to his name. Still, he thought that he could find happiness in the world if only he became the pupil of Bhargava, the greatest of archers. This had only proved to be a mirage. His guru had cursed him and then left him. And now, on top of that, the curse of this Brahmin. Karna had no more tears to shed. He realized that there was nothing in this world worth living for, worth fighting for. There was only one person who loved him, and that was his mother, Radha. He was Radheya. He would remember that and only that. It was up to him to make the world resound with the praises of Radheya, Karna, the Sutta-putra. He wanted to make his mother happy. She had loved him when he needed love. She had dried his tears when he went to her with his childish troubles. She had wiped his brow when he was tired. She was his mother. It was the duty of a son to make her name immortal. That was the only purpose of his life now. Karna went home to his mother. She heard that his education was now complete. But he could not tell her now at once that it had all come to no purpose at all since the curses had ruined it. He did not want to break her heart. So he denied himself the comfort of her love and sympathy to tide over the difficult days, days fraught with pain and despair. He was with her for a few days and then told her that he would go to the Kuru palace in Hastinapur. He felt that his learning would be a passport into the jealously guarded portals of the great palace.
You've been listening to Stories from the Mahabharata, the celebrated history of Greater India. Compiled by the great sage Vyas many thousands of years ago, Mahabharata is written in the Sanskrit language in verse form and is here adapted for radio and brought to you by Radio Krishna. Tune in again for our next presentation of Stories from the Mahabharata.